Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome back. Before we jump into the heart of the show with Anthony McCarthy and our guests, I want to make sure that you all get your tickets to WEAA's first homecoming cruise. Join us for a night of fun and games at WEAA's Cotton Club Casino Fun Night, Cruise Aboard the Spirit of Baltimore, Thursday, October the 8th from 7 to 10 p.m., sailing from the historic Inner Harbor. Your ticket price includes dinner and a special performance from soulful jazz vocalist Gene Karn. A portion of your ticket will benefit WEAA, so don't miss the boat. Tickets are available by calling 410-727-3113 or 1-800-695-BOAT. That's 1-800-695-2628 or go online at weaa.org and join the festivities. We're here this hour. Anthony McCarthy remains in the studio. He hasn't fled yet. He is, of course, host of the Anthony McCarthy Show here on WEAA every Friday from 5 to 7 p.m., co-host of the Monday program here on our hour. And we are joined for part of this meeting this hour by Dr. Jonathan Weiner, who is a leading expert on the healthcare reform in this country. He's been a guest on my show for the last 16 and a half years on and off, and telling me to find somebody to talk to who knows what they're talking about. He's a professor of the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health. And Jonathan, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Hi, Mark. Hi, Anthony.
Hi, Jonathan.
So, give us your... I'm just about to tease you, but I won't.
you already did a few minutes ago. I was listening.
You got us.
So tell me, Jonathan, about this Baucus plan. And I want to get our listeners to join us at 410-319-8888. And what's your analysis of where this debate is going and what this Baucus plan does or doesn't do?
Well, I'm an expert in healthcare policy, not healthcare politics.
No, I know that.
I want to get that. And the congresswoman, and I'm glad we have people like her, is an expert in politics.
Yes.
So, first thing, if we get the Baucus plan, it'll be the biggest improvement in healthcare we've had in 40 years. All right, let's get that out on the table. Mm. Could it be better? Yeah, it could be better. Would I like the public option? Probably. But let's remember that what's in the Baucus plan is probably a 4, 5, 6-fold improvement of what we have now. So I want to get that out on the table. Now, the politicians may say, you know, we can do better, and, you know, I'd like to do better myself. But I really can't say whether or not the Democrats alone can get it through without a single Republican vote. It's looking like we're going to get one or zero Republican votes. So, but let's talk about the plan. First of all, for the first time in history, sick people can get private insurance. Yeah, I think that's pretty good. Considering right now you're sick, you're not likely to be able to get insurance. Secondly, right now, a large number of people with low incomes get no subsidy. The Baucus plan proposes to subsidize up to families making, I think it's about $66,000 for a family of four. That's pretty good. Medicaid is going, our program for lower income and disabled will be expanded considerably. That's pretty good. Individuals will all have to participate. I think that's important because there are a lot of, healthy and wealthy people out there that choose not to participate. And so all of these things are good. Now, if you like, I can talk to you about the things that aren't so good.
Tell us those, too.
Yeah, well, the public option is out. They are talking about, and again, the public option, remember, it doesn't quite exist in nature. Medicare for all, which mm-hmm. is, if you give me 10 seconds, that's probably the easiest, best health care proposal. That has its problems, too, but that isn't going to happen. And, the single-payer advocates you've had a lot on your show are quite disappointed, understandably, perhaps. And the public option was a nod toward them. But, let's not forget that 40% of Americans and 50% of healthcare dollars are in a public option. That's Medicaid and Medicare. So as you can tell the way I'm introducing it, it's become sort of the lightning rod, and it probably doesn't deserve to be that from my perspective, but that's out. They're talking about something called healthcare cooperatives. Who knows what a healthcare cooperative is?
That was my question, Jonathan. I kept trying to read and understand there are some things happening around the country with these co-ops, but I'm not sure how that translates.
Anthony, there really is no such thing in nature as a cooperative, at least in healthcare. I think we have some rural electrical cooperatives and farmers mm-hmm. cooperatives. There are a few HMOs that have cooperative in the name, and that because originally their board of directors was consumer-driven, and that's pretty cool. That's good. And when Blue Cross first started, it too had consumer boards that control things. But most agree that Blue Crosses aren't exactly consumer cooperative. So I don't think that. I mean, it might grow, might become something, but it really isn't a replacement for a public option, no.
I mean, let me see what our listeners are thinking. 410-319-8888. We're talking with Dr. Jonathan Weiner from the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health about the health care plan that Senator Baucus put forth. I have my own questions about it that I'll raise, but sure. Here's what you think at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com or jump on over to the Mark Steiner Facebook page and log on there and throw your comments right there. Max, you're on the air.
Okay, yes. Hello. Well, I'm talking about the Baucus plan, which I think has a lot of desire. First of all, he's supported by the industry. He gets a lot of tax money from the industry. He doesn't even want to consider a health care option at all for public. He's always been against it from the beginning. And even we had a meeting earlier in the year about health care, he never had a representative for public option. So Mac Baucus and all the committee, all the people have been tax money from the industries. So they compromise. To me, the Democrats don't need a Republican to push this through. They can push it through without the Republicans. All Obama needs is a little backbone, like Teddy Roosevelt, and push it through. He pushed the New Deal through without any help the same way. He needs to push it through by himself and just tell the Democrats to buck up. Because if they want to get reelected, a lot of Democrats are on the fence because they win by reelection. But, like, you know, you need to let them know that if you don't fall in line, you're not getting the help from the Democratic Committee to do this stuff. And they can push it through. They don't need the Republicans. They got the majority. You know?
All right.
And that's how I feel about it. I mean, I'm in the healthcare industry. I work in healthcare. And I know that we do need it. We need a public option. We need competition. Okay? We need it for everybody.
I appreciate that call, Max. And Jonathan, picking up on what Max just said, I mean, that there's a lot of criticism about Senator Baucus's bill because, A, he's so heavily funded by the insurance and the pharmaceutical industry.
Well, that's true, but so is everybody, you know.
He more than most.
Well, perhaps that's because he's in a powerful committee. You know, Hillary Clinton got a lot of support from industry. President Obama got a lot of support. Everybody got a lot of support. I certainly prefer that wasn't the case, and it is true. Baucus got a heck of a lot. But that's because he's in a powerful committee. Ted Kennedy does okay himself when he was there. And look what he did for us, you know. So it is troublesome, all this PAC money. I fully agree with Max on that. But we've got to get people a health insurance card. Again, I'm not a politics expert.
No, you're not.
If the president can ramrod something through and he's not worried about the blue dogs and he's not worried about re-election, then I think let him do that. However, I think what remains in the Baucus plan is just about what I would have imagined what would end up in a plan that could pass. You know, I could be wrong on that, but so we're talking again politics.
No, and also, I mean, but I also know that you that whenever we have discussions over these last 16 years or so, Jonathan, you've always been able to kind of work your way around, and I mean this in a positive sense, working around all the issues, so looking at all sides of it and kind of being able to kind of explain what goes on here. But it seems to me, though, that the Baucus plan is built around this whole idea of an individual mandate.
It is.
And
correct.
That assumes that in your insurance pool, there'll be younger people, but there's no guarantee that young people are going to be in your insurance pool. And it would only require people to purchase catastrophic coverage. So if that's the case, then policies could really kick in at much higher levels than the usual employer-provided policy.
Perhaps that's true, but a public option, you know, again, let's say it was on the table. It was going to, if it was going to compete, it's going to have roughly the same coverage. And let's remember the public option, you know, I actually don't want to be an apologist, you know, against the public option.
No, I didn't think you would be. No.
But I unquestionably would take this proposal with everything it has versus nothing with a public option, you know. So, and if they can get the public option, that's good. I mean, the individual mandate, and now there was an employer requirement, an employer mandate. It is really pretty weak in the Baucus plan, but it's also being weakened in some of the other plans I hear, too. You know, the House has several bills, as the Congresswoman said, and the Senate Health Committee, Christopher Dodd is now the chair of that.
One of the things I've heard from some economists, though, is that, and the people who have been close to the Hill, is that this bill doesn't do anything about healthcare costs. If anything, the way it's written, that because of how insurance companies run and how healthcare costs run and the way the pools run, that these healthcare costs could actually rise, not lessen.
I think that's probably true. And I've never, the president is one of the best presidents we've had overall, and certainly for health care. But he hasn't been fully honest about how we're going to save tons of health care dollars through, through this reform. There's really no, just as you say, not a lot of savings anywhere.
Go ahead, Anthony.
The other question I had, Jonathan, when you look at the bill, just to put people at rest, a lot of our seniors were very concerned about how their futures were going to play out under the Baucus plan. And we were waiting and waiting for some Republicans to get on board, some compromises to be made. Do you think that seniors are more comfortable now that the president's been on his media blitz explaining that they're not going to lose their services?
Well, I hope so. He's the best communicator we've had in some time. And seniors now and forevermore will be getting more and more health care. Mm-hmm. So any seniors listening should be comfortable with that. However, all of us, seniors, youngsters, everybody, health care, and ISCA, I'm actually doing a talk show, if you believe that, in Geneva tomorrow.
I can believe it.
And they spend a lot less than we do, but they're concerned about their health care costs growing, too. So I think everybody, including seniors, should be concerned and should pay attention about health care costs going up and that we can't have everything for everybody. And one of the best proposals I have heard was getting your family doctor sitting down and talking to a family about end of life. Last time I checked, we're all going to die one day, right?
I think so.
I think so. And so better your family doctor sitting there talking with the family and getting on board. And those that don't want to die connected to a million tubes and costing $400,000, well, that should be their choice, you know? And so this death panel business is a bunch of things I can't say on the air.
you're going to talk to the folks in Switzerland tomorrow on a radio show in Geneva. You said, now, it's interesting because there are a lot of different European models.
There are.
The French model is different. The Dutch model is different. The German model is different. The British model. And the Swiss model is altogether different in that it has a lot of competing private health care systems and a public plan.
It does. And guess what? They also have, with that, they have social solidarity. Everybody gets covered. And so we haven't quite gotten there yet, but
yeah,
but they do. They are comfortable with private and public competing, and that is one of the places where there are some public options. But again, I want to remind your listeners that 25-30% of all Americans have a public health insurance plan, and that will increase, not decrease, as time goes on.
Right. What was that number? Was it 28%?
It's about 25% are either in Medicaid or Medicare.
And then you add Veterans Administration. Yes.
Oh, yeah, true. It's even higher. And Medicare is growing and growing as us baby boomers come on board. And Medicaid, the Baucus plan and others, are looking for very significant expansions of Medicaid. So, we can't call this completely right-wing, I don't think.
We're talking with Jonathan Weiner, who is professor at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health, who's been on this program for many years. We're talking about health care and where it's going. Your thoughts on all that and the Baucus plan and what you heard Donna Edwards talk about a minute ago, where she's going to put up a fight and really push for the public plan in this, in the House. 410-319-8888 is the number. You can write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. Log on to our Facebook and throw your thoughts on there. Well, not, just write them on there. You can throw things at me later, I'm sure. 410-319-8888 is the number here. I guess maybe I've gotten more jaundice than you, Jonathan Weiner, over the years, just looking at this, where healthcare debate is going in America. Just because I just see them not really wrestling with the underlying issues.
Well, that's true, but every time they try to deal with an issue, you saw what happened in the heartland. That's a little scary. Mm-hmm. And again, we're talking politics, not policy. So I think certainly getting people to understand the issues will be important. But at least getting people an insurance card is a starting point.
But Jonathan, what about, and I know you got to go, but what about these calls for efficiency? And a lot of conservatives often point to the fact that they don't want to see government run anything.
Right.
But we talk about Medicaid, Medicare. We talk about veteran services and veteran resources. And they, for the most part, now I think all things can be improved. They're government run. And they're run pretty efficiently.
Well, I think so. And, if people given a choice,
mm-hmm.
for example, in Medicare, the majority of all elders were offered
That's
private
right.
HMOs, and only about 15% chose them, 12% chose them. So, you know, I think that people, they talk a good game how they don't like government or the post office, this post office, that. But, I mean, FedEx won't deliver an envelope, or even though it's up to, what, 40-some-odd cents. But still, I do think that the government's not perfect. We've all waited in lines and at post office. And so, I don't know, it's a duality about how we feel about government and corporations, Anthony. I will remind people that HMO executives, they get a bad rap, but because they're not all evil. In fact, most aren't evil. But they're right at the top, along with tobacco executives and oil executives, being the least regarded.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's not entirely fair. I've met a lot of them, and they're really just regular people working within a system that we've created.
Jonathan, I have time to take a couple of callers while you're on the air.
Yeah, I can hang out a while as long as you need me. It's up to
all
you,
right.
Mark.
410-319-8888. Nikki in Anne Arundel County, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi, everyone.
Nikki.
Good evening.
Hi, Nikki.
I'm wondering why this health care reform bill is such a difficult thing for everyone to understand. I mean, I'm listening to the cable news talk shows, and everybody's still scratching their head. And I know these people are probably smarter than me about most things. So I understand that we should have a public option whereby which people would be covered. I understand that there are people out here, because they don't have health care, do without certain medical coverage, because there's, you know, there's no one. And I did that for years. My husband worked as a contractor, and we didn't have insurance because his job didn't pay insurance. He had to buy it himself, and it was too expensive. So I actually had one of my children at home, which I wanted to do, but I did it because I believe that you know, that it was an option for me, you know, because I didn't have health care. Had I had the health care, probably wouldn't have done it, but I made that choice. So I'm saying, why is health care, this health care plan, so difficult for everyone to grasp?
Mm. Probably politics is playing a large role in the opposition, and for those who are in favor of the Baucus plan or the three House versions of the plan. I'm sure Mark and Jonathan have their own take on why. But when I watch those cable shows, oftentimes I have to remind myself that there are vested interests, whether it's financial or policy, there are vested interests in the positions that we take on these matters. And I think in many cases, politics and whether or not you want to see Democrats succeed or fail tend to really play into our decision making on how far we go in support of this legislation.
Yeah, I think you're right. Everything's become quite polarized.
Mm-hmm.
But also in response to Nikki, things, you know, healthcare is complicated even right now. You know, people lucky enough to have an insurance card, you know, it doesn't work so smoothly all the time. Just to paint a picture, something we haven't talked about in the Baucus plan and all the other plans, these new exchanges, health insurance exchanges,
mm-hmm.
you know, if you were lucky enough to be able to say a federal employee or a state employee working for a big company like Johns Hopkins, you go and you have a choice of 3, 4, 5, 6 mm-hmm. different policies. That's the way it's going to be in this exchange, and that'll be run by government units. And that's sort of what they do in Massachusetts. And Nikki or anybody listening, you know, they can go even if they're sick. Even if they, you know, don't have easy access, they can go to this exchange. It'll be on a website. And if they make incomes less than $65,000, they'll actually only pay part of the freight.
Wow.
So, you know, that's a lot better than we have now. And if they're sick, they can't be excluded. So, and if we have a public option, by the way, you'll click rather than on A, B, and C, you'll click on A, B, C, and D will be the public option. That's how it'll work.
You're listening to Dr. Jonathan Weiner, who joins us here for this part of our hour. He's a professor at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health and always lends kind of a very practical, pragmatic look at where all this is and what it means for us. We're talking about health care. We heard from Donna Edwards, Congresswoman from the 4th. Before that, in the half an hour proceeding, you can join us here at 410-319-8888. I'm here with my co-host Anthony McCarthy in the studio. And Ray, you're on the air.
I just want to make a comment, not necessarily a question. Every time I hear the word or the phrase healthcare reform, I cringe, because the prefix in the word reform, what's implicit there is that, you know, we had something that was formed before, similar to return. If I have to return, that means I have to turn again to an original position. If I have to reunite, I have to go back to my original position of unity. Whenever I hear the word healthcare reform, that prefix just makes me cringe, because we never had anything formed. Nothing was foundational. It was not. The word reform just is not in alignment with the way it's been used, and that's my only comment. We've had chaos. It's nothing that was solid. So whenever I hear healthcare reform, I just cringe because it's the foundational thought is not honest.
Mm. That's a very interesting thought. Go ahead, Anthony.
No, I was going to say that he brings up a point, Mark. I was very naive. I've had great jobs and extraordinarily good healthcare coverage up until the point when I lost my job. And when I started and was diagnosed with lupus recently, and when I began to, Mark, meet with my doctors, when they began to write prescriptions, when we started to try to get a handle on it, blew my mind. And then all of a sudden, I became this healthcare, I don't want to say it, but healthcare reform advocate, because mm-hmm. I really saw what happens when you fall through those cracks. And if it's happening to me, a single male, well-educated, and knowledgeable about certain things, certainly I know a lot of families and individuals are just struggling and just barely getting by. And so as Jonathan said, when I read part of the Baucus plan and I was on with you last week and we were trying to go through it and we were trying to understand it, in my heart I said, you know what? This is better than nothing. And I hope that there is movement. And I even was willing to throw that public option out the window if we could get everyone a card where people could begin to find coverage.
And Jonathan, why don't Ray's thought about reform being a misnomer?
Well, yeah, Ray's got a good point, but human endeavor is pretty chaotic. I think he used the word, what is that, fractal theory or whatever?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And, I've seen a lot of healthcare systems around the world, and most are more organized than us, but none of them go from point A to point B in a logical way, Ray. You know, so I think that you have a good point, but I do think that there are some changes that we can make, and you know, and filling in some of the pieces are a good starting point.
And my kind of also political gut in this tells me that this is far from over. That yeah, the Baucus plan is going to be really changed considerably inside the Finance Committee. Especially,
well, I read there were 562 amendments and counting as of a few hours ago.
Right. In the Senate.
Yeah, right. And you know what happens is they put together, what is it, the two Senate plans and the three House plans, and then they pull them all together. So, yeah, we got a long way to go.
Yes, from there, because there it goes to the conference committee between House and Senate.
And then it has to go back.
But the good news is I've seen some side-by-sides, and there's actually 80% agreement. So that's pretty exciting. And we're honing in on where there is not agreement. You know, that's the public option. But remember my discussion to Nikki. People are going to go online. They're going to pick A, B, C, and D. You know, and with the public option, they'll have one more. And I think a lot of people will pick it, but I got news for you. They're not going to pick it unless the quality is as good or better and the price is lower. And I might add, the public option, if it's passed, is not allowed to be subsidized.
That's
I think
right.
The subsidy may be because it has less profit, but I'll remind you that half of all insurance plans are not for profit, supposedly. But if they're for loss, they're out of business.
Right.
those that are for profit, it's about a 3% markup.
But Jonathan, is it possible? And this is probably more policy than you want to talk about.
Policy I can handle. Policy,
okay. Is it possible to have a public option that pays for itself without any taxpayer subsidy?
Well, I don't think it's existed anywhere in nature yet.
I found that fascinating.
Medicaid and Medicare, for sure, are not that example. I do think that it is true that there are a few examples, although they are subsidized in other countries. And, you know, you might know better than I or other cases outside of healthcare where public insurance is not subsidized. You know, I don't know if the public auto insurance is not subsidized, but it's also an insurer of last resort.
Mm-hmm.
It clearly has to be subsidized at some level, I think. But I mean, in public plans, though, I've the stats I've read. I mean, you're talking about 3% markup is the administrative cost for private health care plans, whether they be profit or nonprofit, or a great deal higher than that. I mean,
well, that's the big point, Mark. You know, the profit's only a few percent. The administrative waste. You know, some people. You know, some say 50%. That's not true. It's probably 1.5 to 2.5, but that's still way too much. You know, 15% to 25%.
Right.
But a lot of that, I mean, don't forget, some of that administrative markup is doing good things, computer systems,
managed care that's good, you know, such as helping people manage their diseases. But it's also a lot of waste, you know, the stupid billing system that has, at last count, 120,000 codes to keep track, you know, and doctors and hospitals and everybody, you know, have to hire all these people to keep track of these things. That's pretty silly.
You're right. There are good things. Like I remember reading just recently about prevention care and prevention education that's taking place in a lot of healthcare institutions. And you can only interpret that kind of stuff as good.
And that's considered really administrative cost.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's good. So I'd say about maybe a third or a half of that administrative cost is not evil, Mark. It's good stuff. The other two-thirds is not so good.
See how he assumes. I was gonna assume,
that's so why he said Mark.
Mark, he thinks I think it's evil. 410-319-8888. Nigel, you're on the air.
Good day, gentlemen.
Good day.
I have one comment, and then I have a question. My comment has to do with I just get the feeling that the healthcare debate and the what I consider to be a rush to get it done this year is driven, in my viewpoint, from Obama's ambition than the practicality of case makes waste if we give enough time to evaluate the pros and the cons of the different aspects of the proposals, as well as if we look at other countries' successes and failures and adapt what we think will be the best of all those worlds and bring that to the table. It probably will stretch out over a two-year period, but then half of the country that's hell-bent on not wanting anything to do with the plan might be more favorable because there was some attempt to realistically evaluate the options and for everyone to have a chance to study it and feel comfortable with the end result, rather than everyone seemingly having these talking points, some are against, some are for, but at the same time, the masses don't have a clue as to what it's all about. I think it just needs more time.
Jonathan, quick thought before we go to break?
Well, the only quick comment, Nigel has been working at it since Roosevelt trying to get health reform, so so I think it has been a while that we've been trying to get something going.
One of the questions I found posited in an article recently, but does anyone in the healthcare debate really care about healthcare? and that's it's tongue in cheek, but then it's my old kind of populist tendencies maybe coming through, Jonathan and Anthony. But I want to talk about a little bit, you know, more about that. I mean, when you look at countries around the world that do so much more than we, and I know I come back to this all the time, and then we probably may not get anything beyond what Senator Baucus has put on the table, but we may get a great deal more. We'll have to wait and see. But I'll raise some of these issues when I come back, and there are a lot of you who are online here calling up, so let me call your names out so you hang out and wait for us, like William, Mike, and Will Kern from Queens, New York, all who are coming in. 410-319-8888 is the number here. We're going to take a very brief break and come right back. Jonathan Wyden will be with us for a bit more. And Anthony McCarthy will be with us for the entire time because he's stuck with me. I want to remind you, the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the University of Maryland Women's Health for every stage of a woman's life, offering compassionate care and comprehensive obstetric and gynecological services from routine exams to specialized pelvic surgery. More information is available at 1-800-492-5538 or at www.umm.edu/Women's Center. We'll be right back. Hello, I'm Mark Steiner. Welcome back. Anthony McCarthy is in the house. It's Monday. Anthony McCarthy, of course, is co-host here on Mondays. Anthony?
Great to be with you, Mark. Great discussion on healthcare.
Important discussion we're having here on healthcare the last hour, first with Congresswoman Donna Edwards and now with Dr. Jonathan Weiner from the Johns Hopkins School of Public Health, Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health.
There's a certain mayor somewhere who wants you to say that over and over.
His money in right. there, too, to get that name.
Right.
And the number is 410-319-8888. You can write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. or you can go on to Facebook and throw your comments there, and we on there, and we will read them on the air as well. Let's go right to the phones here, and then I'll come back with the thoughts I had. 410-319-8888, and William in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon, Anthony and Mark. Yes, good afternoon, everybody. Basically, I'm not really coming from a real deep, formal perspective. I'm just listening to what everybody's saying.
Right.
I had a question. How does Canada foot the bill for their healthcare system?
That's a great question, Jonathan Weiner. I know you can handle that.
Taxes and payroll deductions, like, you know, we get out Social Security and Medicare, and they, you know, keep costs down, but they do a very good job with what they have. But people have to wait sometimes for things that aren't life threatening.
Dying in the emergency room, so that's not, you know, like the lady that died in L.A. walked right by, she was laying on the floor, nobody didn't help her, but then my other question was, how does Cuba afford their health care? I know it's a communist country, but I don't know if it's true that they have free, all the citizens of Cuba have free health care.
Oh, it's true that almost every country in the world has free health care for their citizens, And Cuba, you know, it has some very good health care in the cities, and everybody gets something, but in general, it wouldn't be a level that most Americans would be comfortable with.
I think you raised some interesting questions. I think around the world, I mean, you look at health care systems, and I was just looking at something a little while ago, and I had to pull it back up to make sure I was right. I mean, in Japan, they spend around 8% of their gross domestic product on health care, but it's a much broader system, and they even... We see a lot of systems like Japan or New Zealand, which spends about the same, and some other countries, Jordan, that pays for 23% of two-thirds of all Jordanians have free health care, is that they also pay for non-medical practitioners, counseling, alternative medicines, massage, acupuncture, which we don't do here as well. I mean, so I guess that was the question when somebody posed that question to me the other day about, does anybody care about health care? They're saying we're talking about, you know, the nuts and bolts of the insurance industry and the lobby, but do we ever really talk about what real health care reform means?
Yeah, well, I mean, of course, there's a whole bunch of issues, and, you know, health and wellness is a lot more than just medical care. Certainly consumerism and involvement. One thing for sure, though, is no matter how we design it, there'll be people clamoring for more. So that's the challenge. By the way, which they are in Canada, which they are in Cuba, and which they are in the UK. You know, I just think it's the human condition.
410-319-8888. Will Kern in Queens, New York City, are on the air.
Yes, Mark. Hello.
Hi, Will. Welcome.
It's a pleasure to be with you and your learned panel, and I'd like to... kind of fire a question to you guys that might be a little further afield, but it's something that I've been thinking about since the collapse of the Soviet Union. It's kind of been, and it's got to do with this whole issue of what the government's role is. So when the Soviet Union collapsed many years ago, in other words, after the world was so polarized by the overly centralized system of the Soviet Union and communism and the ardent belief of Americans in just the opposite, I used to think that finally we here in the U.S. would have a good grown-up conversation about what is and is not the proper role of government, because all that time during the Cold War, we were so dead set against the over-centralization of communism. And we never seem to have had this conversation, it seems to me. It seems to me that instead we started to march we had a triumphalist march in the opposite direction, if you will. And I guess my question is, have we now finally embarked on that long overdue conversation?
Good question. Anthony and Jonathan.
Well, I think that I love the way you context that, the way that you couch that, because I think that the way I look at this issue and the way I look at resources that are available here in this country, the greatest, in my opinion, the greatest country in the world for many reasons, but a troubled country as well, is that we have a standard of living in this country that we keep in the context of the United States. And oftentimes when we talk about things like healthcare, or we talk about housing, or we talk about the litany of issues that we could raise, we put it in context of what we know here in this country. And when I started to look at healthcare around the world, And people started saying, oh, this program is good. This is what they do in this country, and this is what they do in that country. What I realized when I began to read, or you began to read stories about housing or employment or healthcare, is that it's at a standard that Americans, for some reason, would never accept. We would literally, I believe, revolt in the streets if we had healthcare similar to what is in Havana or up in Canada. I don't know if maybe revolt in the streets is an overstatement, but we have a very high standard of living that doesn't allow us, caller, to really reach deep and have those kind of conversations about our standard of living as opposed to other standard of living in the Soviet Union or other countries. We're very blessed in this country. And I think oftentimes that blessing informs our conversations about public policy.
Jonathan Weiner, maybe it fogs it as well.
Yeah, you're right.
Well, just real quickly, I think, Anthony, you're onto something. Certainly Cuba, other than in, you know, the leading academic hospitals, we wouldn't find that acceptable, other than Michael Moore found a good care in Sitco.
He sure did.
Yeah, he's got a new one out, right? But anyway, that's
yes,
that's
he does, on capitalism. Yes.
But Canada, I think in general, Americans would be quite pleased with most Canadian health care. However, you know, when you want that MRI for that tennis elbow, or you see that little purple pill on TV and they give you a pink one instead, in Canada you may not get it. Or you have to pay out of your own pocket, which isn't so terrible. But people aren't dying on the street. They get health care. Everybody gets something.
But here's the point. I mean, what you just said, though, Jonathan, I mean, isn't that part of the problem, some people could argue, with our system? Now, America is a land of choices. I mean, innumerable choices, choices that never seem to end on everything that you can imagine. And, you know, the idea that what you, especially what you said last, which was that little pill you want that's blue and not pink or whatever color it is.
Everybody wants the blue pill.
Everyone wants the blue pill. Everybody wants that little blue pill. Thank God for that little blue pill. But just, but in all seriousness, is that particular, what that's being fueled by is the fact that we allow pharmaceuticals and others to push healthcare as on television as ads.
But hold on a minute. It's not just the pharmaceuticals. It's we Americans. You ask any doctor, perhaps someone will call in, you know, a lot of my colleagues, clinicians, they, you know, the patients, they want this, they want
it,
that.
Yeah.
It's like Anthony was saying, you know, we've come to expect a pretty high standard, and that's what is going to have to change.
But is that the high, I mean, there's a difference between expecting a high standard.
Well, it's expecting a standard that is, I think, unattainable. If we're going to get that cancer drug for everybody when it really is going to work, we're going to have to avoid that MRI that we really don't need. There's no other way.
But it's also, isn't it also being fueled in part when we start advertising?
Oh, of course. Absolutely.
Pushing
absolutely
certain operations and certain procedures and
only
certain
two,
pharmaceuticals.
I think only one or two other countries allow such advertising. Most countries, it's illegal.
I mean, and that is a piece of it. And, you know, and we shouldn't have to spend all that money in MRIs for mm-hmm. a bloody tennis elbow every time we have it. I mean, it's, you know, it just gets...
We shouldn't, but we've come to equate that. You know, you watch on TV. When was the last time you saw prevention and talk therapy on the fancy shows? You know, mm-hmm. it's always something heroic.
Let's join us here, 403-19-8888. What do you think about medical care, about the reforms that are being debated, and where you stand on those issues, and what you think about our health care here that you may have now, and whether you're satisfied, unsatisfied with it. And what you think is fueling this debate. 410-319-8888. And see what we have here. Sean, you're on the air.
Hi. Good evening, gentlemen.
Good
How
evening.
You doing today?
Well, thank you.
Well, you know, that's funny that you mentioned the Michael Moore, because I was going to touch on that. But I'm just curious to know, are the politicians who are opposed to the health care reform, are they willing to downgrade their health care? Or even... I mean, if they're supposed to be for the people, then show how much they really are for the people and maybe try to take a cut in some way. You know, because my problem with this whole reform thing, it's easy to basically dismiss the health reform, especially when you have the best health care available already. But maybe they should try to have some kind of a reduction in their health care, maybe to a standard plan, maybe HMO or something. I guess, you know, maybe while the legislators iron out the health care reform, maybe for a year or two, and then I'm quite sure that they'll be more apt to look at it a little differently from a different perspective. So what do you think the probability of them, if the president would reduce their health care all across? And maybe that would cut some of the money right there.
Yeah, I think that's not going to happen. And I think that often I've heard people say that a lot. And somebody, Mark, on your show, when we talked about the president's address before Congress about health care, someone called into your program and said, well, you know what? I wish the president had went further. I wish the president had said, let's give the Americans the same health care, the same government-run health care that you all enjoy. And I said to myself, well, that certainly wasn't going to score the president very many points with those fence setters. But come to find out, there weren't any fence sitters in there. They were all pretty much polarized on the health care.
The plan, you know, the federal employee plan, it's having some financial problems as well. So, you know, we'll have to see what happens in the future. There have been some proposals that just what Sean suggested, you let others in, you know, that the federal plan is, it is, in fact, like a health insurance exchange, except instead of having four or five choices, you know, they sometimes have 50 choices. And the other thing that's interesting is in many plans, they're often called, many of the legislative plans, that is, they're proposing that there be a tax on Cadillac health plans. So it'll be interesting to know if they tax themselves. I don't think they usually do that on Capitol Hill.
What about, can I ask another quick question, sure, Jonathan? In the Baucus plan, is there anything, remember this idea, we get a lot of callers who say, look, I run a small business, and if you mandate certain things, it's really going to cut into my bottom line. Are there requirements by employers?
Well, it's often called an individual mandate. That is, that the single person who you know works on their own.
That's right.
And then there's sometimes called pay or play or an employer mandate. It is quite modest in the Baucus plan, and in some of the other plans, it's not a full requirement. I haven't read all 300 pages, but to the best of my knowledge, it is just sort of a modest, if you have some of your people that don't get insurance, you have to help pay some of their subsidy.
Mm-hmm.
But no, the full bore proposal would be that if it's play the game, provide health insurance for your employees, or pay an 8% tax on their payroll. That is not in the Baucus plan.
Okay.
But it may be in someone else's plan that may attach.
It may, but I've heard the Blue Dogs and a number of other Democrats will not vote for that because a lot of employers don't support that. But again, that's one of the two or three areas of negotiation.
Folks, we have Dr. Jonathan Weiner with us. Your thoughts on the future of healthcare in America, the debate going on now. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Let's go to Mike in Baltimore. You've been holding on a while. You're on the air.
Good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hi, Mike.
Look, I used to think of health care as just a human right. Some kind of single-payer thing seemed like the right to vote to me. I know it was simplistic, but I thought we should let sick people get medical care, and including the 47 million who have no insurance at all. But then not today. I changed my mind today. I went to the website of the insurance companies, and they said, look, we can't afford to give health care to everybody. The trouble is our kids are eating too much. Let's take some food away from the kids and take away their health care, and the money we save we'll give to the insurance companies because we need it. And I ask you to endorse this human rights proposal, all of you. You're progressive guys. Don't you dare insult our insurance companies. They need the money and they need the compassion. Now, I'm begging you, give the insurance companies and the bankers, for that matter, the compassion they deserve.
Well, Michael, I think we should make it a platform for the rest for the show here. Jonathan, can you sign on to that?
Yeah, Jonathan, do you sign on to that?
Well, healthcare for all, I'm a professor of public health, of course. You know, so, you know, my international colleagues, they just shake our head at either our immorality or amorality. But on the other hand, Mike, I think our kids could do with a little bit less Coke and Pepsi and sugar. And I'd actually like to see a tax that, you know, that would go to, I wouldn't want to give it to the insurance executives, but would go to subsidize healthcare. You know, they estimate that maybe a quarter or a fifth of healthcare costs are related to obesity, childhood obesity, and adult obesity. So, you know, that really is not a trivial issue. So.
Right, I'm starting to feel very self-conscious. We need to move away from this part.
Okay. I'm no slimster either, you know?
So. But, I mean, if, you know, if and I mean, we talk about the health plan being put forth by Senator Baucus. I got something in, on the over the email today about United Healthcare, which is a plan, a major
big plan,
in this country.
Oh yeah, the biggest for-profit insurance company.
70 million people under its coverage, $75.4 billion in profit. That I was reading today. Spending on lobbyists. That was just all. There's one article that was sent to me today. $7.3 million on healthcare. But this is the same company that had to pay $50 million in New York because they were sued by Andrew Cuomo for over unreasonable charges. They will be have to give up $3.5 million in a fine for mishandling claims in California. A subsidiary of their company was fined $2.8 million for late payments to hospitals and people insured. They refused to say that it would stop dropping coverage when they were asked by the U.S. House in a recent testimony this summer in June. And the CEO was forced to resign and pay $468 million for manipulating stock options. So I only raise this because they also urged their employees to attend the anti-reform town halls in 2009. So I raise this because in all this talk about Senator Baucus' plan, we forget the role that private health insurers have played, and maybe the debate would be more intense if we understood these things more.
Well, I mean, I think, Mark, that you're onto something, and I you know, not just United, but I think that there are real serious questions to be raised about all of these, not just for-profit, but non-profit institutions in our country. There is a lot of money, and I still, the words of the lobbyists ring in my head where they said, look, we want health care reform as long as we continue to make our profits. So, I mean, I think it's clear where they stand. I think it's probably less clear where the American people are willing to lower the bar or raise the bar, depending on where you are, to get health care for all.
Let's not forget, though, you know, the industry is not just insurance. It's also That's our true. Doctors and hospitals, you know, that we feel obviously a lot more warmth toward, as we should. But, you know, far more money goes into the pockets of doctors and hospitals and hospital administrators than HMO executives. So it really is, it's really, we must look at the big picture. And, you know, and we need to make profits and salaries concordant with doing what's right for people, too. So you know, that includes prevention, that includes healthy communities. So, you know, I do think there's hope. And the health insurance industry, I can't speak for United per se, is on board, which they've never been before. Granted, you know, they're afraid of losing control, perhaps, but a little-known fact, 90% of all the Medicare and Medicaid program is really run by private insurance companies. It's just that the control is in the government.
Right, and there's an argument there as well, Jonathan, that those that has also added to the cost of health care. Now, you would know better than I, because this is what you...
Yes, that's true. On the other hand, you know, the efficiency, which isn't bad in most places for Medicare and Medicaid, you know, where would it be? Where would it be without the private industry? You know, I can't say.
No, I can't say either. I always wish the government could figure out a way to be more efficient and not have to give it over to private industry. But that's become part of the problem. I think what we're talking about here today, though, is what we're going to see is that this healthcare debate, even if these bills pass, will continue to be a fight. And I don't know how it's going to affect, this is not your bailiwick, I know, Jonathan, but I don't know how it will affect President Obama and Democrats in the coming elections.
Well, that's what they're paying close attention to. And,
right.
You know, they're damned if they do, they're damned if they don't. You know, if they pass it, obviously there'll be a lot of people who are happy and not a small number that are unhappy. And if they don't pass it, for sure, that'll be the case.
And I think the American people and our listeners need to be reminded that this isn't going to happen overnight, that this process, you know, as much as the president and the speaker want this legislation to be enacted or they want this process over by the end of the year, it's possible, Mark, that it won't be.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
And even if something is passed, rest assured, Anthony, we were cautioned by using the word reform, but I do think it is a reformation. It's going to take 3, 4, 5 years,
definitely.
And then it's going to be a work in progress. And people, the one thing that I am pleased about
is, I've been teaching this stuff and talking about this stuff for years, but now everybody's studying it, and they really should, because it's about all of us. You know, it's not just about the medical or public health people. It's about every American. You know, healthcare is pretty important.
Just in what you just said for a moment, Jonathan Minor, just for you to reflect for just a minute about that. I mean, this has been your work for a long time, and we've had a lot of conversations you and I have on the air over the years. And we started out when President Clinton was putting his health care reform package out, and we had panels across the city and state to talk about this. So talk about your perspectives in terms of what's going on in terms of policy and how different it is now, and what do you think we've come to?
Well, I think certainly everybody's paying closer attention. The insurance industry and the doctors and the hospitals are supporting it. I might add, all three of them did not support it last time around. We have a case where, both chambers of the House and the president are in one party. I think things were a little tighter last time around, weren't they? So, I think this is an opening, and who knows when all of these things are going to be in place. So, perfect is the enemy of the good. We can't forget that. So, we need something good, and we need it now. I think there's a chance of it happening.
Jonathan Minor, I do appreciate you taking all this time with us and being part of our program today, and we look forward to talking to you very soon, and take care.
Thanks for airing this issue and for having so many smart listeners. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Take care, Jonathan.
We do that. We have some great listeners here, and I think that's part
very
of
smart
that
listeners.
Makes this show. Mm-hmm. I mean, I really enjoy it. We're not out of time. We have time left. You want to join us at 410-319-8888 to continue this with Anthony and I as we sit here to kind of conclude this story on public health care, and something which we'll look at very closely. And we've got to get the rest of our congressmen on this show to answer these questions.
That's right. I'd be very interested to see if the same level of enthusiasm that we heard from Don Edwards is shared by her colleagues.
I'd like to know what Congressman Ruppersberger has to say and Congressman Sarbanes has to say, and Cradiville, and all the rest that are in our listening area, and to hear what they think about where we are going with health care, and what they think about whether or not they will fight for a public option. I think there are a lot of people who think that you can't take a public option off the table, that it has to be part of this discussion.
I was listening to Congressman Weiner from New York, and he lambasted the Baucus plan, and he said the Democrats need to stand up and that the public option cannot be an option. It has to be in the final plan.
It'd be interesting politically if this thing blew up because of the public option. Now, I mean, they're worried about the not the yellow dog Democrats, the blue dog Democrats.
Blue dog Democrats.
The blue dog Democrats, they're worried about them not backing it, but what happens if all these progressive 75 or so congressmen say, we're not going to back without a public plan, and the unions say, we're not going to back the president without a public plan? I mean, this could come apart a number of ways, or it could all come together in some very strange way.
And I think that it's very telling, Mark, that no Republican has signed on to Baucus's plan. Not one.
Part of the problem here with so far the administration and the Congress is they've compromised before they've
that's right.
They've won anything or even been defeated. We'll do more of this again soon. Anthony McCarthy, thank you so much.
Always great to be with you, Mark. I look forward to our Mondays.
Me too. Mondays with Anthony and Mark. Come next Monday for that, or join Anthony McCarthy this Friday at 5 o'clock here on WEAA. Come back to us tomorrow at 5 o'clock. We have some very interesting things coming up tomorrow, which you can check out on our web. One of those being a wonderful production with some Iraqis about what happens in Baghdad and from the perspective of people like us who happen to be in Baghdad, which should be interesting. Stay with us for that one tomorrow. Urbanite Radio Stories and the Mark Steiner Show are made possible by Maren Alsop and the Baltimore Symphony Orchestra, presenting its 2009-2010 season featuring Kathleen Battle, Andre Watts, Yitzhak Perlman, and more. Tickets to the Meyerhoff available at 410-783-8000. Or at bsomusic.org. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producer is Justin Levy, with additional help from Christina Arison. We're engineered by Brian Boone. Our interns are Judith Lloyd, Brian Boone, Christina Arison, Richard Good, and Gay Pinder. Our theme music is by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear this show again, podcast any of our past shows, and hear additional interviews, visit us on the web at steinershow.org. And for public radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. I'm Mark Steiner. Take care. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by MECU, Baltimore's credit union, and the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development.